Can I take your coffee?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Sorry.
Get, imagine if I'd been like, no, you cannot have coffee. Welcome to Nourished by Spinneys, the podcast which promises to inspire you to eat well and live well. I'm Tiffany Eslick.
And I'm Devina Devecha. This is a space where we hope to nourish your heart and soul. On this show, we chat with leading players in the food community, from farmers to foodies, as well as health and well-being experts. It's all about engaging conversations and fresh ideas.
And we have an exciting set of episodes lined up for you that we're calling The Artist and The Scientist. So over two episodes, we'll be talking to two chefs from the two iconic Atlantis properties. That's the newly opened Atlantis The Royal and the stalwart that is Atlantis The Palm here in Dubai.
That is actually super exciting. Who are we starting with first?
So first, we have The Artist, who is Chef Grégoire Berger, who leads one Michelin star Oceano that is truly one of my favorite homegrown restaurants.
I've been to Oceano just once, but it's not just the food. It's the experience of dining there, from the plating to, of course, being surrounded by water and fish.
Which was also the incredible backdrop for my conversation with Chef Grégoire, which you'll be able to see if you pop over to social media for our video clips from this episode. And we covered a lot of ground, or is that a lot of nautical miles, from his love for travel and how they inspire his menu to how he's using AI.
He's using artificial intelligence?
Yes, you know, okay. He dropped it into a sentence while we were chatting, and yeah. I was like, hang on, what are you doing with AI? And he's using it to generate a number of images for his menu book, which is so fascinating, and that's why we're calling him The Artist. He's wild, he's inspired, and to use his words, he can't be caged.
Okay.
He even calls their chef collaborations masterpieces.
I absolutely love that, but I have got to say, I think he's always been like this from the start. I first met Chef Grégoire when he represented Africa and the Middle East in the San Pellegrino Young Chef 2016 final in Milan, and watching him compete there was like watching art being created.
So being that creative artist runs through everything he does. And he's such a fascinating chef to talk to. And yet it's incredible to think that it was not something he planned to do at all.
It happens by mistake in a way. I was not bad at school, but school didn't interest me. I was like always looking outside, I remember. And Brittany is very rainy. I used to love art and craft and music and stuff like that. And my education was also on books and so on. So I was a dreamer. And I was always looking outside and say, well, I want to be outside living life, right? And I didn't manage in college to be that good, and I didn't know what to do. And one day, when my parents split, my mother traveled to Morocco, and she was living there, so mm-hmm. I was just living with my father. And he was a doctor, pretty caring, and he put me in a kind of place where I had to stay the whole week at school, and it was a kind of a college where you learn mechanics and stuff like that. Well, that was the worst thing to me, and after 9 days, I told him, you have to get me out of that, or else I'll get myself fired from it. And he took me out, and he didn't know what to do with me. But at this time, I was partying with a lot of friends, and older than me, and there was chef de partie and sous chef in a Michelin star restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? That seems cool. You have freedom. You have money. You can party. It's cool, right? So yeah. I decided to follow them. But what really gave me the trigger of wanting to be a chef? It's several things, right? One of them was the first chef I met. That was my first mentor, Fernand Corfmat. The restaurant was called La Closerie Cardin. And he told me that, you know, in life you have two paths. You have the path of your friend. You are where you are. You're going to be like that all your life. And today, sadly, 24 years after, my friend still exactly in the same thing, on the same bar doing the same thing. Didn't achieve much, but maybe they're pretty happy. I have no really idea about that, right? But this is not the life I wanted. Or else you just follow what I'm telling you, I teach you, and then I will place you in different other Michelin star restaurants, and you're going to build a career, and hopefully it's going to work well for you. And it started this way. And so I was a little bit in between for many years, but I really love the kitchen. I really love the discipline as well, because I was not really disciplined, not being a bad kid, right? But again, I was a dreamer. So I think this reflects to me today.
Yeah.
Even working in Oceano in Atlantis, where I'm not really disciplined in a way that I do the things the way I feel it. And this is the only way for me to be happy. And then I fall in love with the craftsmanship, the products. I was outside. Back then, everybody today is making a fuss of being locavore, having a great products and stuff like that. But we used to have a garden back then. I used to pick rhubarb,
yeah.
By the way, in season. We have seven kinds of basils. We have to have flowers and everything. And today everybody is making flowers around. We used to do that 24 years ago.
Yeah, it is crazy the way everybody sort of obsesses about this now and pretends like it's something new. But yeah. If you actually look back into, you know, as you say, 20 to 30 years
It means
years
that
ago.
We didn't understand much.
Yeah.
Because we learned the wrong way.
Yeah.
The best way to cook is to pick something on the ground, on season, and caring about it, growing it, caring about your animals, slaughter your animals, and do your food out of it.
Yeah.
But we are so in a generation of pre-made everything
that
some people and some chef most probably doesn't even know what a full pig look like or full cow look like and what are the parts and everything because you buy a strip line or buy a tenderloin, but you don't even know where this is situated.
Yeah.
And this is a story that maybe said that is that we always go back to the roots to make, it's so nice, so cool, like in France. Right now, there's a kind of a trend where it's all about the broth.
Yeah.
Everybody's excited about the broth.
Yeah.
Broth is the first thing you learn at school, right?
Yeah.
So I was apprentice. I didn't mention that. So what was interesting is that at 14, I started to be at work. And one week a month, I used to be at school. But at school, at night, they was calling me to go in the kitchen. So I was 14, I was working maybe 15, 16 hours a day. I love that.
Yeah, that's really good. And I mean, that does teach you discipline from such a young age, as you say. And the fact that you've stuck to it, you know, what keeps you in this, like, since 14?
Travel and photography. So
I
got graduated and I got an accident.
Yeah.
Got an accident. Not much people knows, but I got an accident. I fall from a cliff in Brittany. I broke 12 ribs. I was a pretty spiritual kid, I would say, and I was always wondering what life is like that and what's the purpose and so on. And I had a few accidents along the way, and I felt that if I keep going the way I was drinking a lot, partying a lot and so on, and I thought that if I keep going this way, something bad will happen for real. This really scared the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to move. So I scrolled on the website that was called L'Hôtellerie. And it was a lot of offers and everything. I put my finger on one destination. Really happened like that. And I said, this is where I'm going to go. It was a 2-Michelin-star restaurant in Andorra, which is between Spain and France. And I started off like that.
Wow.
And then I travel, and this is the menu that you had from that, where I travel in many different countries. The fact of traveling gives me freedom. So you asked me why it keeps me grounded and being wanted to be a chef. I was bored very fast. I haven't been really chef de partie in a long time. I ended up being sous chef and head chef almost out of school. So I had to learn from my own mistakes. But I had to learn mostly alone. Even if I work in amazing restaurant along the way, I had a feeling that I wanted to do the thing my way, with my feelings. And then I met my wife. When I met my wife, I bought a camera and I started to learn photography. And this is a very short version of the question you asked me, but I started to love beauty. And I started to love making able to create something beautiful, to capture it my way, the way I think, to share it. And it was Facebook by then. And I started to have an interest of showing what we do and making beautiful things. And it was exciting, right? And then it started really to keep me into the field till I came to a channel where I started to become capable of telling my own story through my own food and being proud of it.
I love that you use photography because I think it helps, I mean, in an obvious way, but it helps people see the way that you see the world, like the way you might see light or pattern or where you find beauty or the angle that you take something. Yes. It's so subjective, but it really like shows
like
you
food.
Into your world. Yeah, it is like
it's like food. And I can go even farther than to say music, cinema, the theater, food, anything that touch your soul, right? It could please me. I mean, I'll be very honest with you. I could stop being a chef tomorrow. Will I miss it? I don't even know. I could do something else that we love.
Yeah.
You know, traveling all the world and making photography. And I know I'm a lot into AI. I'm trying to understand how things work, use it for my work as well.
Yeah.
I'm like the flow of this aquarium. That's why this place was the best for me first because it relates to the ocean and to where I come from in Brittany.
Yeah.
But also, it's a constant motion.
Yeah.
And me, I don't like to be stagnant.
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah. Now you can pick that up though, being around you. Like you've got a great energy that, you know,
I don't know. I'm just speed, right?
How are you using AI? I'm intrigued.
But, you know, and that's where people don't understand the power of AI.
Yeah.
The book that you had, where I created Escale.
Yeah.
So I created a whole book that is my menu for who doesn't know. And I created it entirely. And I need to generate pictures out of it because let's say I want to represent myself in Brittany sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
Some of the pictures from my family, I don't have exactly the scenario, right? So I can prompt it and get exactly in a abstract way or in a moody way, in autumn or whatever, and I can just picture it.
Okay.
So I started to prompt images that look very real, represent the moment, that are abstract, to make sure that it's not really showing me or the idea, or using just getting a leaf. I want one leaf to put on my book. How do I generate it to make sure? So AI and prompt helped me to a lot creating a visual support of.
I think what's interesting is that you know, this is your third chapter with this new menu. And the fact that you're drawing just on such authentic stories and your experiences and, you know, as you say, when you're coming up with these menus and this one in particular, like how long does it take? And how do you do this? Like, do you sit down and write, I'm going to do this today and I'm going to start brainstorming? Or is it like a collection that you just write down for like months and months and then you put it all together?
It's a bit of everything. Yeah. I always say when people, and I guess, ask me every day, how did you come up with something like that? And
yeah.
I always say it took me 20 years just to be able to have the capabilities of thinking about it and putting it on the paper. But to be honest, at the book, it took me 2 months to do this book.
Mm-hmm.
I took the backbone of the menu that has already certain locations, certain memories, certain things, and I create a scenario. So usually we create the story, and with the story we create the dish.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes we create a dish and we try to put a story on the top, but it's more difficult.
Yeah.
So like we have this hot dog that we do about New
York.
One
of my favorite. Oh my gosh.
About New York City.
Yeah.
And I was at this moment on the journey of, because I wanted to, for Escal, the third chapter of Oceano, I wanted to tell my story from being an apprentice to being in Dubai many years, like a decade or more. So I took every where I've been in all my life. So I started to make a pattern of that. And then I started to draw a story, which is a real story. But like Jamaica come at this time and Florida come at this time. And New York come at this time, but New York doesn't come at this time. So I need to get inspired to make sure that the dish will be cold, too warm, too hot, too dessert, using this pattern. But sometimes not easy, because you frame yourself. And the concept of tales and travels through food, which is what I call Oceano, identity, give me space. And I need space to work.
Yeah.
If you tell me I open a French restaurant tomorrow, I'll do it, but I will not work in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put someone else to take care of it.
Yeah.
Simply because I don't want to frame myself to something that is too defined.
Yeah.
Art. And I believe what we do is art. It's a wider thing.
Absolutely. I mean, each course is like a work of art. And it's the whole experience. It's from the person coming and talking about it beforehand at the table. It's what you're being shown. It might be something that you can interact with.
But that's the thing.
It's immersive.
You know,
it's, you know.
When I say, well, you imagine you have the pattern.
Yeah.
Then you have the story. But then how do you link the story to the dish, to the flavor?
Yeah.
So this is what is the most complicated.
Yeah.
Because when you have the fourth course, a candle that is a foie gras candle that you cut, you decant the wine out of it.
Yeah.
And the guest doesn't understand what's going on and everything. When you do that at the fourth course, what do you do at the fifth?
Yeah.
What do you do at the sixth?
Yeah.
People doesn't realize that, because when you go in, you go in the cinema and you watch an amazing movie, you don't ask yourself, you're not here to, when you pay for a movie, you're not here to understand how many months they spend on it and everything.
Yeah.
Just take it
and
you spoil about it and it's cool, right?
Yeah.
What we do is the same thing. People are not paying to be aware of the amount of work that comes behind, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I hope people respect and do think my goodness, this is a lot of work.
Most do.
Yeah.
Some don't, but this is also why we're in Dubai.
Yeah.
In Dubai, you have so much demographic and people coming from around the world. You cannot expect people to. And I think we are giving people. We are not taking people.
Yeah.
So you need to give without expecting anything in return.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. You know what I liked just at the very beginning of the meal is when you take people into the little room and you have the sort of edible plastic sachet. Yes.
And a soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know, soundtrack, 7 languages we did.
Yeah.
I created myself as a.
Gosh. Yeah. It's quite zany. But
yes,
yeah,
it's
I liked
more like
it.
To,
yeah.
In a way, to put you in a situation where you you start the concept, you start the journey with a kind of a speech. If you listen properly, it would give you an entire understanding of what you're going to live after.
Yeah.
Who are sensible? Not spoil.
Yeah.
Going everywhere constantly. Or who are awake in a way,
mm-hmm.
will truly appreciate Oshino.
Yeah. Because
they will understand the beauty of what we are trying to do.
Mm.
And some people will overlook completely. They will come, their matter will be either they are not paying attention,
mm-hmm.
which happens very often.
Yeah.
And or either they just come for the aquarium. Yeah. But they will pick up along the way eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there is so much things going on, so they cannot stay static.
Yeah.
We cannot say what we do, it's subjectively. We cannot please everyone.
Mm.
And taste is and isn't subjective.
Mm.
What is good is good.
Mm.
What can please you, it's subjective, because we don't all like to send it. So it's a very interesting what we've been able to create here, because it's not a place by essence that could let someone like me be.
Mm.
And I'm glad to be in this sense into Oceano, but also in Atlantis, where I think we have one of the most amazing management, leadership, friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think I have people on the top of me like Kim Barter or Cedric, which is a VP, FNB, used to work as executive chef here. These people are masterpiece of knowledge, of drive. They work extremely hard.
Yeah.
But they are extremely caring.
Mm.
We are evolving in a corporate world
that
is very human-driven.
But I think that you feel that, like when you're here for a meal, you feel that everybody sort of believes in what they're talking about. They clearly feel supported. It's a wonderful atmosphere that it has been created here. And that's because, as you say, it's coming from the top down.
Yeah. It's very, like we say, it's endemic.
Yeah.
You're going to find that. I mean, of course, there's millions of good restaurants.
Yeah.
But what we do here, I'm sure nobody do the same thing, at least. It's not being good or bad or better or not, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's truly unique.
How do you see like your role? You know, are you like the conductor? Are you the experience creator? Like how would you define your role exactly?
A bit like the mad scientist that try to prove the world is not right, but that he has a good point and try to educate people to the common sense thing. I'm a lot detached to forcing myself to be to be accepted as a leader. I try to be by essence because I believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've a huge luck of having an amazing people, an amazing bunch of talented people around me. We have Aurélien, my number two. We have three sous chefs, amazing, an amazing team. The front of the house is, it's very good. I think Ashley served you this night, and she's. I saw her growing in 2 years here from a South African girl had a lot of potential, but didn't know what she wanted to be, and maybe having the chance to inspire her a little bit, and through that, seeing her today being an amazing bulletproof element for me.
Mm.
You know, when you are in my situation after 10 years in a restaurant like this one,
mm-hmm.
what I'm seeking is to get people around me that love the not myself.
Mm.
I don't ask to be loved. I think I want them to love what we do.
When we come back, Chef Gregoire tells me how he conceptualizes his menu, his favorite collaborations at Oceano, and perhaps one of the best answers to our Nourish question.
Ooh, what did he actually say?
That's right after this short break. Davina, let's take a minute to talk about one of my favorite things, cheese.
Do you have a favorite kind of cheese though, or is that too hard a question?
Absolutely. I'm not even going down that road. But I know the cheese I want to talk about right now, and that's Parmigiano Reggiano. I was in Italy earlier this year and found myself surrounded by wheels of them stacked into towers, almost like a skyline. This is at our supplier Zanetti, which is now in its fourth generation, having started in 1900 by Guido Zanetti. His great-grandson Paolo Zanetti gave me a fantastic tour.
Most importantly, did you get to try both the Parmigiano Reggiano and the Grana Padano?
Yes, absolutely. I tried various wheels of cheese of different ages, and Paolo really went into detail about like which cheese goes with which dish that you're trying to serve.
For a big occasion, like together with a very good Italian red wine or You know, champagne is good to have a very well mature Parmigiano Reggiano, like a 3 years old Parmigiano Reggiano. If you want a product to be created on pasta, like 60 months old Grana Padano is very good. And as a table cheese or as an appetizer cheese or a piece of cheese, I used to have a Parmigiano Reggiano, well mature Parmigiano Reggiano, like 3 years old Parmigiano Reggiano.
So the next time you're serving something special for your friends or family, or just indulging in a slice of pizza or leftover pasta for breakfast, grate some of our Spinney's Food Parmigiano Reggiano or Grana Padano today. Welcome back. You're listening to Nourished by Spinney's, and let's get right back to our conversation with Chef Grégoire Berger. How much time are you getting to actually be in the kitchen? So is it when you're creating, as you're coming up with something new, like you do all of that and then you train everyone and then you sort of out, or?
So I create every single dish in Oceanon. I create every single dish in every collaboration we do. Let's take an example. We do a collaboration with a chef, and the chef is from South Africa, and I want to do a dish about tacos with pulled meat and jalapeno, whatever. And then I gather with my chef, and they ask me, okay, what do you have in mind? So I say, okay, I want this. I want the chips on the top. It has to taste casual, but be very, very beautiful. Mexico will be, for instance, three different color on the flag. We're going to drizzle. I just put out something like totally randomly, but this is the way I will do it, right? Yeah. And we need to make sure that it has the spiciness, the kick, and it's very fine and represent the kitchen of the chef coming to visit us, because this is the way we do. When we do collaboration, we don't do Oceano food. We create a menu as per where the chef come from, which help us to create a lot. So anyway, so I put my team on that, and they start to make their own take on it, which not always works. But what is interesting is that I really taught my chefs, and especially Aurélien, to be creative on his own. Of course, we have a framework that that is Oceano storytelling and everything, so we have to respect that. But within that, do whatever you want. After, we'll put it on the table, like it or not. But what they do after, I modify it.
Okay.
I'll do, okay, a bit more of that, a bit less of that, or I don't like it at all, right? And in this case, okay, this is what I had in mind. Because when I create a dish or when I put a dish on the paper, I visualize it.
Okay.
I never go random, so, and I visualize very fast. I want to teach to my team, and that's why when I left Oceano in 2021 and I came back after a long break, I wanted my number two sous chef at this time to be chef de cuisine. Not to me to be executive chef or whatever. Yeah. I don't really care about that. It's more because my role as a leader, as a chef, is to make sure that my path, what I learned, has to be taken over by someone else that will have to give to someone else, right? So there is no ego really into that. I'm a free mind, a free soul. I'm not afraid of having people that potentially could be better than me around.
Yeah. I think you must always have people that are better than you actually around, you know?
Eventually it will always happen, but you get better yourself.
And with your collabs, so, I mean, you've done a lot of really cool ones. I was sad to have missed the one with Josh Nyland because I'm obsessed with his fish butchery. Is there someone that you would really still like to do a collaboration with that you haven't?
Again?
Yeah, or again, or a new person?
I'll be very honest. I think every and each collaboration we did was a masterpiece to me. Of course, it has their own weakness. The food is not always perfect because it's a collaboration. And, it takes a lot of effort and parameters that sometimes you cannot really control. I have a few that I really, really, really loved. And all of them I really, really loved.
Yeah.
It's just one more, really. I loved Julien Royer, the chef 3-star from Singapore.
Yeah.
For different things. The first thing is that because he owned the space the way I did. So when he was here, he was on the floor, he was on fire. And I felt he was much more successful than me. And he's an amazing dude, right? But what I love with him is that really his food was great. Our menu was cool. He was ready here with his team. I felt he could take over Oceano in 3 days.
Yeah.
But also because today we are very friends. He's the kind of guy I speak every day with him. We have always friend joke.
Yeah.
We have the same kind of things, right? Only a French expatriate chef can understand another one.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of appreciation for him not being a prick after all the success that he got.
Okay,
he's still very human, very cool, taking a lot of time when he must be even more busy than me.
Yeah.
And I'm busy. I love working with Natsuko, Natsuko from Italy. She was amazing because she has a soul on her own. She's a kind of alien. I like that. I like interesting people.
Yeah.
A bit crazy, a bit weird. This is fascinating for me. El Cedar de Can Roca, masterpiece of, it's like the Pope of the Spanish cuisine. Mugaritz.
Yeah.
Mugaritz was like mind blowing. Josh Nyland was mind blowing because this guy really taught me what I thought I knew.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything, which is very interesting because this applies to everything in life. We think we know, we don't know much, right?
Yeah.
So, amazing chefs. It'd be incredible.
Oh, it's exciting. Just listening to this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask a bit about Grégoire kind of outside of Oceano.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's all linked because you're using all your experiences. But where do you, like, where's your dream destination? You know, that you still want to go to perhaps to eat? Like country or city or, and why?
I think I'd like to go to South America more. While before wasn't at all my cup of tea. Like to go back to Japan, but because I'm a geek as well, everybody is like praising Japanese food and everything. I'm not a huge fan of Asian food, except Chinese. I love Chinese food. I love Japanese food.
Yeah.
I have, of course, every respect for the products and the techniques and the madness, but it's not what excites me most. But I love to go back to Japan because it's a planet on its own. And I feel peace when I've been there several times. I really felt peace, safety of the heart. Beauty.
Yeah.
Not every country like that. You go in Paris today, you don't find much beauty anymore. It's a bit of a mess to me, even if I'm very proud of my country and my and all around, right? But if you ask me where I would like to really to go back, is maybe in Japan, South America. You know, my wife, she always said that luxurious or wealth, it's peace.
Well, that's so powerful.
She is. Yeah. She's so right.
Yeah.
I don't apply that to myself because I'm constantly, like all of us, grinding constantly. But I truly believe that. I'd like to be in a place where I'm just happy to be at the moment, right? And Japan was one of these places where I was like wandering in the street and just being happy, right? Because it's new, because it's exciting. There's another beauty, right? People are different.
I love the way you said safety of the heart. That's exactly what it's like being in Japan.
Yeah.
There's a kindness and there's a you've put that so beautifully. Talking about your wife, so she's the one who like does all the cooking at home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And amazing Moroccan food.
I didn't plan to get married, maybe like most of us. I believe in destiny and I thought that it was just coming at the right time to me. It brought me a lot of discipline. Because my wife, she's a tough one. She's not the one you mess around with. She taught me a lot. She expects a lot from me. And she's right. She cooks very well. She's Moroccan. She has a very strong culture of cooking. And in Morocco, women cooks more than men. So at home, I cannot cook myself. I think many chefs doesn't. First, we don't have time. And we only do that when we are at work. And most especially for me, cooking in a home kitchen. the knife doesn't cut. I need a commis. I need that. Where's the parsley, right?
My wife, get she the will, kids. Tell them what to do.
So I like to go outside with my kids. I always say that, but I'm someone who pay for his happiness. I pay for my tranquility, right? I buy everything all the time to make sure that certain things I don't want to do, I don't do it.
Yeah.
I'm not someone very economic, right? I have no, my wife always tells me that, they say, you have the money in the pocket, not in the heart.
Okay.
So I'm not a greedy guy about money. I don't really care. If you have money, use it to have a piece of the heart. You know?
Oh.
That's the way I feel.
Do the kids cook with you ever?
Yeah. I taught my kids to cook. And it's very, because usually when I'm off, I like to sleep a little bit at the morning, if I can. But it's difficult when you have two girls jumping on you.
Yeah.
That you didn't see the whole week. So, of course, you, I know we just bought a cat. So
oh, gosh.
I can tell you that the morning is a meow, meow, the kids and stuff. When you pull out my hair and everything. It's crazy. I mean, it's happiness. But usually the morning is my eldest daughter, Jade. She's 8. She cooked full breakfast for her. She put the egg, she do omelette and everything. She do some crazy things sometimes. Some pasta with ketchup and everything. But they have a sense of cutting, cooking, roasting, being safe, making sure that it's not hot, mixing.
Fantastic.
It's essential.
Yeah.
I want my kids to be capable.
One last question. Our podcast is called Nourish, so I want to know what nourishes your soul.
Beauty.
Mm-hmm.
What feeds my soul, it's capturing emotions. I think a world like we have, that is a beautiful world, must be appreciated. And there's plenty of things that are made out of beauty, right? So I'm not saying I'm a selfish person, but I like to do what I like to do, right? It happens in the morning, I just go, I wander in the city and I go in certain shop, I do my things. It's freedom, beauty and freedom.
Okay.
It's the most important thing. I'm not someone you can cage anymore.
You're actually the second person in about 30 episodes to say freedom. So very special.
Who is the other one?
Our Christmas tree farmer. So yeah. Who supplies Spinnies with all the Christmas trees from Denmark.
Christmas tree farmer.
Yeah. There's a wonderful lady called
Trina.
Do you
know that's the thing? Is this guy happy?
She is very happy.
Yeah.
I remember being at her farm in Denmark. And she has absolutely no fences. And she said then, when I was there like 3 years ago, saying she values freedom so much. And then on the podcast, she said the same thing. And you can catch our episode with Trina, our Christmas tree farmer, in your podcast app. We'll also leave you a link in the show notes.
Yeah, that was a great episode. But whom do we have next? Who's the scientist?
You know, this might not come as a surprise when you say the words food and scientist together.
Hang on a second. Is it someone from Dinner by Heston Blumenthal?
Exactly. On our next episode, I'll be in conversation with Chef Tom Allen, who's trained under Heston at both the iconic 3-Michelin-star Fat Duck and the 2-Michelin-star Dinner by Heston in the UK before moving to Dubai 2 years ago to lead Dinner by Heston at Atlantis the Royal.
And that's a restaurant that has earned its own Michelin star last year. So that episode will be out in 2 weeks.
This episode was brought to you by Spinnies and is hosted by me, Tiffany Eslick, and Davina Deveccia. We're produced by Chirag Desai. Don't forget to follow Spinnies on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for more. You can also visit us at spinnies.com, where you can shop for fresh produce and a variety of local and exclusive products.